Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with a look at recent developments vis-a-vis German power politics, economics, etc. And we're going to begin by taking a look at yet another acquisition or yet another business deal being swung by the vitally important, powerful, and underground Reich-connected Bertelsmann Corporation. By the way, the role of not only German publishers and corporate interests, but behind that, the Bormann Flight Capital Organization that I spoke about in the first of these half-hour segments, the role of German corporations in dominating American publishing, Bertelsmann in particular, is discussed in a pair of half-hour segments that I did in the spring of 1998 called German Corporate Acquisitions in the United States, and two pairs of half-hour segments, FTRs 122 and 123, that I consider to be some of the most important work that I've ever done. Those two pairs of half-hour segments, again, about German corporate control of American publishing, a consummately important event and something that is not receiving the attention due it. For quite some time on this program, I've been accessing information from the Financial Times of London. That's a vitally important source of news on economic matters, and in my opinion, the Financial Times of London is the single best business paper available. Well, the Financial Times of London is also now entering into a venture with Bertelsmann. And bear in mind that what we looked at, the dynamic that we looked at in our first half-hour segment, namely the deep sixing of the vitally important Paul Manning book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, through the corporate connections between American corporations and their German counterparts, and also in particular the role of the Thiessen family in helping to deep six the Martin Bormann book, because Bertelsmann's chairman, Reinhard Mohn, has as one of his protégés the head of Thiessen AG. The connections between the Bertelsmann Corporation and Thiessen are profound, and noting the influence of the Thiessen group in helping to deep six the Paul Manning book, well, that exemplifies my anxieties concerning the German corporate control over American publishing. And I would note that now Bertelsmann is going to be in a very cozy arrangement with the Financial Times of London, along the lines of the dynamic that we looked at in the first couple of half-hour segments. That could lead, the first half-hour segment, I should say, that could easily lead to a censoring of the news in the Financial Times of London, an excellent news source, and one that has been used for some time on this program. Following article comes from the Financial Times of London of Monday, March 1st of 1999. This is an article by John Gapper, G-A-P-P-E-R, the Financial Times media editor, and it's headlined, Pearson in German Joint Venture Plan, subtitled UK Group to Link with Bertelsmann. It reads in part, Pearson, the publisher of the Financial Times, and Gruner & Jahr, the German publishing group controlled by Bertelsmann, will today detail plans to launch a new German business newspaper competing with established titles such as Handelsblatt. The German language paper will be edited and published separately from the Financial Times, although it will be printed on pink paper and will draw some articles from the Financial Times network of correspondents. The companies are expected jointly to invest about £60 million, or $96 million. Bear in mind that this type of business connection can lead to the sort of I'll scratch my back, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours arrangement that we saw in action with regard to the submerging of the Paul Manning text, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, in our first half-hour segment. Bearing in mind the Serpent's Walk scenario and the dynamic that we looked at in our conversations with Professor Wilhelm Stauffer, in which German corporations have been buying up strategic heavy industry, energy, communications, and media in various countries by way of achieving political control in those countries, please note the following, a vitally important, a huge prospective merger between Deutsche Telekom and Telecom Italia. The following appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle's business section of Tuesday, April 20th of 1999. This is an article entitled, Italian and German Telephone Giants Expected to Merge. Telecom Italia and Germany's Deutsche Telekom are expected to announce an agreement as early as today to merge in a deal valued at about $95.4 billion, creating the world's largest telecommunications company. The combination would rank as the biggest corporate deal in history. It also is the most stunning example to date of corporate merger frenzies that are remaking European businesses and the global telecommunications industry. Analysts said the combined companies could develop a serious challenge to U.S. phone giants such as AT&T. There was also speculation that Deutsche Telekom, which owns a 10% stake in Sprint, might try to buy the rest of the U.S. long-distance company. Note that if this deal goes through, and it's still pending, as I'm recording this on May 3rd of 1999, the deal is still pending. But please note that this would be the biggest corporate deal in history. And note also that Deutsche Telekom owns 10% in Sprint, and that this might, if this deal goes through, it might permit Deutsche Telekom to acquire all of Sprint. That is the third largest long-distance carrier. That is significant not only because of the connections of the Bormann Group and the Underground Reich to German corporations, but also, in particular, with regard to Deutsche Telekom. Deutsche Telekom is the majority ownership is the German government itself. The following comes from the Los Angeles Times of Wednesday, April 21st of 1999. This is an article from the Bloomberg News Service. It's datelined Rome and headlined, Telecom Italia gives provisional okay to deal, subtitled, It will agree to be acquired by Deutsche Telekom pending an accord on voting rights. The article reads in part as follows. Telecom Italia on Tuesday agreed to be taken over by Deutsche Telekom provided that the German government will limit its voting rights in the resulting new company. The new entity, with a market value of $190 billion, would be the world's largest phone company. The German government, which owns 72% of Deutsche Telekom, is expected to respond today, a Telecom Italia board member said. So please note that the German government owns a controlling interest in Deutsche Telekom. They wind up buying Sprint, and they own 10% of it. This could basically permit the BND to tap American long-distance calls as a matter of course. Please note something else about many of these large deals. Note that Deutsche Bank is purchasing Bankers Trust, making the largest financial institution in the world. Hoechst, one of the companies that came out of IG Farben, has merged with Poulon, a French company, to make the largest life sciences corporation in the world. And note that the major companies that came out of the IG are the largest chemical companies in the world as well. This would make the world's largest phone company, and it may very well, if the speculation here turns out to be accurate, put Deutsche Telekom and through that the German government in control of Sprint. Note, too, with regard to these German corporate acquisitions, note something that we covered in our discussions with Professor Wilhelm Stauffer of Stauffer Consultants. Note that although you see major German corporations buying up major corporations in other countries, note that it is a matter of German law that no foreign interest can own a controlling interest in any major German corporation. The German core corporations are forbidden by German law from being purchased, at least to having a controlling interest, purchased by a foreign element. Note also that members of the boards of directors of the German core corporations sit in on German government cabinet meetings. By the same token, German cabinet ministers sit in on the board of directors meetings of the German core corporations. So note that even as corporate Germany, and through behind that, the Bormann Organization and the Underground Reich make major purchases, which will give them a pivotal role in other countries. Note that the same is not taking place with regard to foreign corporations buying controlling interests in the major German corporations. That is forbidden by law. The Deutsche Telekom purchase of Telecom Italia is something worth noting for the purposes of Americans, because Deutsche Telekom has been the focal point of an increasingly bitter controversy, one of a growing number of trade controversies or trade disputes between the EU and Germany and the United States. In particular, there is now friction between Deutsche Telekom and between Germany and U.S. telecommunications companies and the FCC over corporate acquisitions in those respective countries. The following comes from the Financial Times of London of Friday, March 26th of 1999. Now note in this particular article the role of Deutsche Telekom, and reflect on this against the background of Deutsche Telekom's prospective purchase of Telecom Italia and the speculation that that in turn would permit the combined company to buy Sprint, in which Deutsche Telekom already owns 10% interest. This article is entitled Germany Protests Over U.S. Telecommunication Curbs. It's subtitled Concern at Powers of FCC. The article reads, this, by the way, it's by Ralph Atkins in Bonn. And note again the role of Deutsche Telekom here. Germany has complained strongly to Washington about restrictions facing foreign companies seeking to enter the U.S. telecommunications market. Werner Müller, M-U-Umlaut L-L-E-R, Germany's acting finance minister, expressed concern at the discretionary powers of the Federal Communications Commission to restrict access, which, he said, could result in foreign companies being denied access to the U.S. market, quote, for general foreign policy or trade policy reasons, unquote. Foreign companies are also prohibited in the U.S. from holding licenses for microwave links, which often form a vital part of nationwide telecommunications networks. In contrast, Germany made, quote, no distinction, unquote, between German and foreign companies, Mr. Müller said in a letter to Charlene Barshefsky, U.S. trade representative. He pledged Bonn would, quote, take measures if necessary, unquote, to enter a competition and comprehensive access to ensure a competition and comprehensive access to telecommunications markets. Now note the following. His letter follows complaints by U.S. companies about difficulties securing, quote, interconnection deals, unquote, with Deutsche Telekom, the partially privatized telecommunications giant. So, again, reflect on that article about growing friction over corporate telecommunications purchases. Reflect on that against the background of the proposed Deutsche Telekom and Telekom Italia merger, the possibility that the resulting company would then purchase the Sprint Corporation, and also reflect on that against the background of the Serpent's Walk scenario that I discussed in the first half-hour segment, and that's the focal point of an entire half-hour segment available from Spitfire. Note the following story, again, by way of examining German corporate acquisitions in this country, again, against the background of the Serpent's Walk scenario and against some of our discussions with Professor Wilhelm Stauffer about the strategic nature of German corporate purchases in other countries. The following is from the New York Times of Thursday, March 4th of 1999, and this is about the Siemens electrical giant and its growing forays into the American telecommunications and data processing markets. This article is by Seth Schiesel, S-C-H-I-E-S-E-L. It's headlined, Siemens Plans U.S. Venture in Data Market. Reads in part, Siemens AG of Germany is about to expand into the fast-growing data networking business by forming a new American subsidiary, acquiring two private companies in the United States, investing in a third, and hiring a senior executive from IBM, executives close to the company's planning said yesterday. Siemens, one of Europe's biggest manufacturing companies, is also in preliminary discussions with 3Com Corporation about paying $1.2 billion for the 3Com unit that sells networking equipment to telephone companies, the executives said. Siemens plans to announce on Monday that it has agreed to acquire Castle Networks Incorporated, a private data networking company based in Westford, Massachusetts, for about $300 million in cash, and Argon Networks Incorporated, a private data networking company based in Littleton, Massachusetts, for about $240 million in cash, the executive said. And note again, Siemens here looking to purchase a 3Com unit that sells networking equipment to telephone companies. Continuing, Siemens will also announce an agreement to acquire a $30 million stake in Accelerated Networks Incorporated, a private company based in Moorpark, California. The acquisitions will be folded into a new Siemens venture to be based in Boston, the executive said. While the internal codename of the project has been Siemens.com, the new unit may be the first Siemens venture not to include the Siemens name. My misgivings about the growing Siemens and other German corporate purchases in this country was the anxiety that I feel was concretized in an article that appeared in the Financial Times of London of May 1st and 2nd of 1999. This concerns the Siemens closure of a very, very important and expensive plant that it had built in northeast England, an economically depressed region of the United Kingdom. Now, note that many observers believe that the building of this semiconductor plant, now closed by Siemens, had much to do with getting Tony Blair elected Prime Minister of England. Tony Blair was the Labour Party candidate. He had campaigned on a pro-entry ticket, that is to say pro Britain entering the European Monetary Union ticket. Basically, his was a pro-EMU ticket. And one of the reasons, in the opinion of many observers, that Blair was elected was because at the same time, or just before that, Siemens had invested a tremendous amount of capital to build a huge plant in the northeast section of England. And this garnered, in the opinion of many observers, Tony Blair critical votes with his pro-EMU membership ticket. Later, Britain has deferred its participation in the European Monetary Union, and it turns out Britain's unwillingness to plunge right into the European Monetary Union has led to the closure by Siemens of this plant. The point being that these corporate purchases and the resulting economic control that Germany derives from these purchases gives them political leverage in these countries, and they have not hesitated in the least to use that political leverage. The following is by Robert Peston, P-E-S-T-O-N, of the Financial Times of London, in the News Digest section, again of the Financial Times, May 1st and 2nd of 1999. We read the following. It's headlined, "Refusal to Enter Euro Had Role in Siemens Closure," and it's subtitled, "Semiconductor Plant." The article reads in part, "Siemens yesterday implied that the UK's refusal to join the Eurozone had played a part, although not a decisive one, in the company's decision to close a microchip plant in northeast England. The comments may embarrass the UK government, which has consistently cited the collapse of the semiconductor market when explaining the shutdown. When the closure was announced last August, the government said it had been assured by Siemens that neither Sterling's strength nor Britain's decision not to join European Economic and Monetary Union in the first phase had played a part. Note the following. Yesterday, however, the German electronics group said the strength of the pound had not been a decisive factor," unquote. But, again quoting, "as a company, Siemens strongly supports the euro and is of the opinion that UK membership would help to boost the economic prospects of the country, particularly for manufacturing exporters," unquote. Siemens was seeking to explain its decision to invest in a new semiconductor facility outside Paris. This is exemplary of the way in which economic control yields political control. Indeed, the very European Monetary Union itself is the realization of a German plan for world domination formulated by Friedrich List in the 1840s, who proposed an economically unified Europe under German domination as a vehicle for giving Germany world domination and for unseating Great Britain as the dominant power on Earth. Well, Great Britain is no longer the dominant power on Earth. That's the United States. But otherwise, the Least plan is right on schedule. By the way, there is a half-hour segment about the Friedrich Least plan that's available from Spitfire. It's called The Coming of European Monetary Union. So please note the political leverage that Germany gets from its corporate acquisitions in various countries. This the continued purchase of American corporations by German corporations is a profound loss of national sovereignty in this country, and could very well ultimately give the whip hand in this country the decisive role to the underground Reich through the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization, about which I've spoken so often and which is the major focal point of the first of these two half-hour segments. I alluded earlier in the program to a pair of half-hour segments done in the spring of 1998 entitled German Corporate Acquisitions in the United States. Much of that program focused on Daimler-Benz's acquisition of Chrysler, supposedly a merging of equals, but in fact that's not how it's working out in practice, and indeed some of the American executives with Chrysler are beginning to, or Daimler-Chrysler, are beginning to chafe under the German management. The New York Times of Wednesday, March 24th of 1999, contained an article which indicated the extent to which this was not a merger of equals, but rather the German purchase of Chrysler. The following article is by Keith Bradsher, B-R-A-D-S-H-E-R. It's dateline Detroit, March 23rd, and again headlined, "Management by Two Cultures May Be a Growing Source of Strain for Daimler Chrysler." The article reads in part as follows. The merger in November of Daimler-Benz AG and the Chrysler Corporation, presented at the time as a merger of equals, is producing considerable unhappiness among some American managers at Daimler Chrysler AG, who contend privately that the combined company has come to be dominated by Germans. Several recent developments have worried some of the Americans, although the company's American leaders say that their subordinates should not be concerned. A half dozen highly regarded executives have resigned or have retired early since the merger. Daimler Chrysler's fruitless negotiations this winter to buy a stake in the Nissan Motor Company of Japan were led by German executives using investment bankers in Germany. And 9 of the 11 executives in the management tier directly below the company's two chairmen are German, skipping down. A growing number of auto executives say that they expect Robert J. Eaton, the former chairman and chief executive of Chrysler, and now one of the chairmen of Daimler Chrysler, to retire as soon as the end of this year, instead of staying the 3 years after the merger that his employment contract allows. American managers still at Daimler Chrysler also complain privately that more and more decisions are being made at Daimler's former headquarters in Stuttgart, Germany, even though Daimler Chrysler officially has dual headquarters there and in the Detroit area. Gerald C. Myers, M-E-Y-E-R-S, the former chairman and chief executive of American Motors, which Chrysler bought in 1987, said that Germans were dominating Daimler Chrysler now, and that this was hurting company morale in the United States. Quote, "To have to go and kneel at the altar of Stuttgart has to be demoralizing," unquote, Mr. Myers said. Maybe a whole lot more Americans and American executives bowing to Germans and Germany than plan to do so right now. Early 1999, actually it was late 1998, I did a half-hour segment about the growing friction between elements of U.S. intelligence and elements of German intelligence. As this is being recorded on May 3rd of 1999, elements of U.S. and German intelligence are, superficially at least, collaborating in the Balkans War. However, long-term, I see conflict between Germany and the United States. I believe the next major conflict on the international stage will be between Germany and the United States. That's one that I expect Germany to win. Obviously, Germany could not defeat the United States militarily, but the major conflicts in the international stage are, for the most part, settled economically. And there is growing economic friction between Germany and the United States, and this is playing out in growing friction between German and U.S. intelligence agencies. In particular, in a half-hour segment done in August of 1998, updating various stories, and in the aforementioned half-hour segment about German-U.S. intelligence wars, I discussed German pressure on the Menwith Hill listening station in Yorkshire in England. Menwith Hill is run by British intelligence in combination with the U.S. National Security Agency. It is a vitally important installation for the purposes of American national security. America's national interest is, let's just say that Menwith Hill is absolutely essential to America's national interest, and I view the German pressure on Menwith Hill as nothing less than an act of war. It is the equivalent in the information age of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. It would cripple American intelligence gathering capability in Europe, all the way up to the Urals. That pressure, the German pressure on Menwith Hill, is increasing. Research credit on the following article comes from a member of the listening audience who got this from the Electronic Telegraph. That's the internet version of the Daily Telegraph of Great Britain. The following is from the Electronic Telegraph's issue of Sunday, April 11th of 1999. This article is by Tony Patterson in Berlin. It's headlined, U.S. Spy Satellites Raiding German Firms' Secrets. It reads in part as follows. Security experts in Germany have uncovered new evidence of a big American industrial espionage operation in Europe using satellite listening posts in Britain and Germany. German business is thought to suffer annual losses of at least $7 billion through stolen inventions and development projects. With Europe already locked in a trade war with its American ally over bananas, Germany's high-tech industry wants its government to back a counteroffensive. By the way, note Germany, actually it's £7 billion, not $7 billion. Note that the Germans here are scapegoating American industrial espionage for Germany's economic problems. Those economic problems are not caused by American industrial espionage. All of Europe is economically depressed, and that's being caused in considerable measure by the high interest rates that were the result of the Bundesbanks raising interest rates in order to finance the takeover of East Germany following German reunification. So the problem is largely of Germany's own creation. But note here that they're scapegoating American intelligence for Germany's economic problems. Continuing. The main center is used for satellite tapping of millions of confidential company telephone calls, fax, and email messages are believed to be terrestrial listening posts run by the American National Security Agency, or NSA, at Menwith Hill, near Harrogate, North Yorkshire, and Bad Aibling, Bavaria, with the backing of the American government. Quote, industrial espionage is becoming increasingly aggressive. Secrets are being siphoned off to an extent never experienced until now, unquote, said Horst Telchik, T-E-L-T-S-C-H-I-K, a senior BMW board member and a former security advisor to Helmut Kohl. Note the close relationship between German government and German industry that I noted earlier. Continuing. Speaking of Telchik, he is trying to coordinate a German business response to the spying problem. The practice of lifting industrial secrets via satellite listening posts has grown steadily in Central Europe since the decline in political espionage that followed the collapse of communism. But it has been further encouraged by advances in communications technology. Victims have included such German firms as the wind generator manufacturer Enercon. Last year, it developed what it thought was a secret invention, enabling it to generate electricity from wind power at a far cheaper rate than before. However, when the company tried to market its invention in the United States, it was confronted by its American rival, Kenetec, which announced that it had already patented a near-identical development. Kenetec then brought a court order against Enercon banning the sale of its equipment in the U.S. In a rare public disclosure, an NSA employee who refused to be named agreed to appear in silhouette on German television last August to reveal how he had stolen Enercon's secrets. He said he had used satellite information to tap the telephone and computer link lines that ran between Enercon's research laboratory near the North Sea and its production unit some 12 miles away. Detailed plans of the company's alleged secret invention were then passed to Kenetec. By the way, I would take this allegation with a grain of salt. I'm not saying that there was not NSA involvement in the alleged pirating of Enercon's firm, Enercon's technology. That I'm not in a position to say. But if, in fact, NSA was involved, they would certainly know which of their personnel was involved with overseeing the program. And I would not, given the highly secretive nature of the NSA, I would not want to be that particular individual. So masking his face would accomplish nothing. Hence my skepticism about that incident. So again, note, more German pressure on Menwith Hill. This article again from the Electronic Telegraph of April 11th of 1999, their website www.telegraph.co.uk. Okay, www.telegraph.co.uk. That same listener researched another article for us, also from the Electronic Telegraph, this from the Electronic Telegraph of Thursday, March 25th, of 1999. For those people who might find some of my anxieties about German corporations paranoid, savor the following. This is by Francis Harris in Prague. It's headlined, VW's joke in Nazi ad angers Czechs. It reads in part, An advertisement for Volkswagen cars that made a joke of Hitler's occupation of Czechoslovakia on the 60th anniversary of the invasion was withdrawn by the German carmaker yesterday. The montage showed military-style arrows superimposed on a Czech map with the caption, "The Great Spring Offensive," unquote. Skipping down, the promotion was not deliberately timed and did not seek to celebrate the invasion, the firm said, but some Czechs took issue with that yesterday. They asked why, in the country's biggest-selling newspaper, the promotion was placed opposite a page packed with pictures showing Hitler and his troops on the streets of Prague. The arrows on the advertisement also followed the invasion route taken by the German army. The notion of those arrows being following that route as a matter of chance are, well, simply remote. I would note also that this could not have been the accident that VW is claiming it was. This campaign would certainly have had to have been cleared with senior executives, and German business practices are nothing if not deliberate. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.